Welcome to Singled Out, the ninth best Guild Ball podcast. Please stand by.
Welcome to episode 47. In this episode, Andrew, Jason and Rich talk about playing new guilds, if you should or not, and how they set about learning how to play one.
In deinen Augen steht so vieles, was mir sagt. Du fühlst genauso wie ich. Du bist das Mädchen, das zu mir gehört. Ich lebe nur noch für dich. Du bist alles, was ich habe auf der Welt. Du bist alles, was ich will.
Today's listener is Ed Churchman.
Hello, welcome to Singled Out, a podcast with some Guild Ball in. I'm Andrew, and I'm playing Masons.
I'm Jason, and this week I've mostly been playing Union.
Nice. Hello, I'm Rich, and I'm currently playing Obulus.
So, yeah, normal additions, Obulus.
Yes, pretty much. Scalpel's in the box. Scalpel is there. I've seen her and everything. But yes, mainly Obulus.
So, first of all, today's episode has been recorded a few hours after the WTC. I watched a few games, as did Beard, because I saw him on the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty good, wasn't it? It was Germany final. So Germany won. England got third and fifth, I think, wasn't it? And then USA got
ninth
fourth
as
and
well.
Fourth and sixth. So yeah, it's pretty good all around. It was interesting seeing the matches. Did you sort of pick up any sort of tactics at all or ideas from watching the games at all, Rich?
Mainly I enjoyed sledging Dave from Double Dodge and getting an update on just how lovely Jamie was looking. So I'll go back and watch the videos on YouTube at some point, because doubtless they'll be uploaded to Steamforge reasonably soon. But the second Corsair game with Martin, I'm really keen to watch that one back, because Corsair is a far off mystery to my mind. So I was chatting to Connor, who was enthusing greatly about Martin's Corsair play. So I'm quite looking forward to going back and watching that one over and over and over again, as I doubtless will do, just to try and pick some stuff up. Not that I've any intention of playing Corsair.
Good.
I can tell you all you need to know about Corsair using two words that I can't repeat on this podcast. And one begins with F, as you see.
Yeah. He's very good. I mean, seeing Martin play that game, he was very strong, wasn't he? Was that the Brewers game you're talking about there?
Yes, yeah, the one against Pat.
It was close, because at first he was storming around, wasn't he, and taking names, and then suddenly Pat was really clawing it back.
I thought the key point was, much like, I know you didn't really want to talk about the WCC, and we've devolved into a tangent already, but much like how in Alex Botz's game, the turning point was him forgetting to bring Strongbox back on, I thought Pat forgetting to activate Mash really showed us the Illinois tech and meta that we've heard so much about. So it was great to see that in action.
Controversial. Right. Moving on. So today's episode is going to be a bit of a sort of, in some ways, a new player episode again. Although it probably won't be one after the first 30 seconds. It may focus upon how you approach a guild for the first time. Say you've been playing Guild Ball for, you know, a few days slash hours slash months, and you want to sort of expand out to play other guilds. You know, first of all, maybe look at why you should do that, and also what you can sort of learn from it and how it can help you appreciate how the game works as a whole. And then maybe afterwards go on to about how you can then throw toys at the palm and then change back to the guild you like so much, like I have. So, Rich, you've been playing Guild Ball for how long? A few months, maybe? Is it a few months? Or
yes,
that?
So since April.
So you how many games were you playing with?
20. I'm currently on 26 games.
So 26 games. You played maybe half of those with Brewers first, right?
No, most games are with Butchers. That was sort of pre Don't Touch the Beard. And then a lot of that's with Butchers. I weirdly have charts and tables. As Jason has pointed out to me in the past, I do love a good chart. So yeah, a lot of that was with Butchers earlier on or Hunters earlier on. But after that sort of hideous losing streak that came with playing Season 2 Hunters as a complete noob, I moved on to just smashing things in the face with Butchers as it was a complete antithesis of playstyle.
So nowadays, is every game you now play now recorded? Do you play your games off air?
They're recorded in the sense of it goes into a big not Excel spreadsheet. But no, not every game is on camera, if that's what you mean.
Okay. So when you moved to guilds, did you find it hard to move across? And did you find it useful?
Oh, I found it immeasurably useful just because, I am a notorious faction hopper. On the podcast that I do with a bunch of lads for another game, I am introduced as the man that is the only man in the world that has faction hopped more times than he's played games, which I think is a reasonable summary of my attitude to all gaming, is that I like to try all the things because then I understand all the things, or at least that's my self-justification. I have the one that, as I think I mentioned the last time I was on your delightful podcast, I have the delight of producing YouTube content, so my faction hopping can actually be thinly veiled as research as opposed to my own indecisiveness. And it allows me to have a better understanding of how things work. I think I mentioned again on that point, I'm not a theory gamer. I can't just read a card and go, right, that's exactly what it's going to do. I have to actually put it on the table and play with it a bit.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, if I look at cards and stuff, I could tell you what a lot of cards do. I could probably even tell you the gotchas involved with cards, but often I get caught out by them until I get my teeth kicked in by them in person.
Like forgetting that Brick has countercharge?
Yep, did that one. More than once. My most common mistake was Brisket having unbelievable movement. That caught me out like four times, I think. Even though I knew every single time, Shadow, but more than one tournament I went up, oh yeah, dodge away.
See, weirdly, because I played, because Butchers, although it was, you know, not, it was pre-camera, before, because Butchers is what I played the most, and I've always had a Brisket, she never catches me about in Butchers. But as soon as someone puts Susan Brisket on the table, I forget about it every single time. Because I've never played her. Because I've never played Union. And until I play Union, I will forget that every single time.
That's interesting. So, Learn by doing, yeah, exactly. So how have you found it jumping across from blacksmiths to magicians? Because they probably couldn't be more different, could they, really, in terms of how they operate?
It's been really interesting. And I think I've bored both you and Jason to tears with agonising over Union choice. Purely because that's naturally not a problem that I'll have in blacksmiths when they're fully released. Although I must admit, I'm thoroughly enjoying morticians at the moment. And it's weird because it's still looking at path to victory and how I'm going to score and where those VPs are coming from. But now, of course, they're coming from entirely different places and it's opening up different playstyle options. And I think that's the big appeal for butterfly gamers like me, is it's not necessarily I'm putting down a different model, it's I'm adopting an entirely different play style. It's not like, say, you know, for people that are familiar with things like World of Warcraft or other MMORPGs where you switch spec. It's like, oh, I've gone from being a fire mage to a frost mage. Ultimately, I'm still pressing buttons in an order and causing damage. It's a wholly, wholly different play style, which I really like.
It's now been 8 minutes and Jason hasn't said a thing. Are you alive?
I'm a quarter of the way further through that bottle of red wine, so...
Helping.
Percolating in the corner of the podcast for a change. Right? No, I think it's interesting. I jump guilds a bit. I mean, I have two modes, two tournament modes. I have the mode where I want to go and try things and have a bit of fun, which is normally where I take a guild I've never played before. And I have the mode where I want to go bake muffins and try and do well. and that's when I take Black Cat. But I think basically echoing what Rich says is that you, by playing different guilds, you definitely learn more about the game. But there are models that have transferable skills. Like I do feel playing Obulus and Black Cat's not a million miles apart. In
okay,
well, in, having reach and fairly easy to get dodges. I guess is that what you mean by that.
It's direction, having shadow, like having a movement that initially looks slow because it's 4 or 6, but actually if you use the tools that they've got, they can do a lot more. They've both got ways of controlling other models outside of their activation. So Obulus has obviously got Puppet Master, Misdirection. Blackheart's got Misdirection, On My Mark, and his Legendary, which all allows you to move stuff around outside of its activation.
I think Blackheart's Legendary has a very similar passive effect to Obulus's Legendary, in that even like never using it has a benefit in game, because your opponent's constantly in a state of, I have to consider when is that Legendary coming, whether that's the momentum strip from Obulus or whether that's the various pulses that Blackheart does.
People will always be like, well, what's Blackheart's threat? And it's 12 in, you say like it's 12 inches. And so they'll always get out their 12-inch measuring to make sure they're outside of that for like the first couple of turns. And so, yeah, it has a psychological effect on how people behave and how they position their models in relation to yours. Yeah, for sure.
It's interesting because, like, I think there's certainly a sweet spot between staying with one guild for a while and learning what they do. Like, if you're new to the game, changing guilds every week is not going to work at all.
Yeah.
But
it's not.
In some ways, staying with a guild for too long, I mean, in some ways, I should have moved from Masons earlier than I did. I played Masons for about a year before I went on to Engineers. And to be honest, I found Engineers hard, partially because I think my playstyle is so built into the way Masons work, because I learned the game with them.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to switch gears to a different playstyle completely, if that makes sense. Actually, I played them a bit too much like each other. Maybe because I played a new guild earlier, one of my sort of guild board career, to try and... Well, maybe the guild I chose wasn't my playstyle. Maybe if I played a different guild instead, like Union or... another guild like that, maybe I'll find them easier to adapt to.
I was going to say, I think, like, as the discussion we had the other day was that you are trying to play the Engineers like the Masons because you've got a linked activation through Pin Vice and someone, and you've also got Countercharge from Compound, but they function completely differently within the guild to how they function within the Masons guild, and trying to copy and paste that tech doesn't work.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's copy and paste in terms of just, like, for example, trying to do a sort of game that's 2-2, take out some goals. It worked okay with Engineers, and except the momentum gain they have is much less, of course.
Yeah.
And maybe you should have played a guild that was way different in terms of, I mean, Engineers are very different in terms of, you know, lots of range characters and things. Maybe I should have played a guild that did completely different things, maybe like Fishermen, who just pure goals or something else, or maybe a guild that's a bit, you know, similar to Masons, but a bit more skewed towards one direction. For example, again, Union, who are still quite fighty and fight goalie. Or
so, yeah, it's just, I think you're right in that if you're new to the game, you should. It's difficult because the first time you buy into a guild, you might be buying them purely for the aesthetic, and if it actually turns out that how that plays is not to your style, maybe you do need to try a few guilds first. But I do think if you want to get good at it, you do need to just play the same thing over and over again, the same good. Like whenever I play, when I switch to other guilds, I very rarely take a Union option with them. I know, Rich, the debate you've been having, certainly with myself, and as you alluded to with Andrew, is which Union options take your morticians. But I think people get very caught up on having to have a Union option. But whenever I play another guild, I want to play just that guild because I'm interested in learning and how that guild works and how their models work. And
That's interesting.
But then that may come from the fact that, obviously, as I've just said, and people who listen to this know, I play a lot of Union. And so, for me, the value in learning the game is not by playing a Union model in another team, even though they do function differently. As you've said, like, you know, it's a completely different style. What that model does what the Union model does is largely the same whichever guild you put it into, because they don't synergize. They don't synergize with the guild that you're putting them into. They're just a, in brackets, superstar mercenary player that fills a hole maybe that team doesn't have.
When you've been playing with the morticians, have you been playing with the same six models or been?
Oh God, no. I think it's interesting that you know, Jason's talking there about getting good, and that's and whether you mean to or not, whenever you create content, particularly in podcast format, I think there is a tendency for people to lean towards a competitive bent on it. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Whereas I
personally don't really have a competitive aspect to me. I enjoy tournaments, but it all comes down to objectives that one has for hobby, which for me is fun first. You know, I spend 10 hours a week doing the editing for Don't Touch the Beard and the sort of 4 hours gaming that I do a week. And then, you know, you probably stack another 10 hours a week for painting and stuff like that if it's a good week. That's an awful lot of time to dedicate into a hobby where fun isn't the main priority. And I think a lot of people, when you're new to the game and you hear a lot of people say, oh, you need to mainline one guild, you need to purely concentrate on that guild if you want to get good. I always like to present the all sort of the alternative viewpoint of do what the hell you want, because it's your hobby time, it's your life. We're all grown ups, either physically or mentally. And I always just like jumping around and trying loads and loads of stuff out. And I may have forgotten your original question.
So have I now.
But don't worry, because the listeners will have as well. So it's all good.
But yeah, that's fair enough. As you said, your view that the enjoyment is through just trying different things, and for you winning, absolutely, losing is not the overarching reason why you play the game. It's to enjoy the game and to produce content in that. But there are other people who winning is pretty important to them, and their enjoyment is, you can draw a graph between how many games won and how much fun they've had, and it's a fairly consistent line.
And I don't mean to take anything away from those people, because of course, again, that's their hobby time, and who am I to deride it in one way or another? So I've remembered your original question. Original six?
Oh yeah, that's the one.
No idea how I got on that tangent. There's like a core, because Vile Swarm is not a model I'll be taking. Straight away, Dirge is in the lineup every single time. I have put Ghast in my lineup every single time.
It's great, that's why.
Because I like cheap knockdown, and I like having a certain amount of reach in my team. Thank you, Hearth. but apart from that, that's been about it, to be completely honest. I've messed around with a lot of stuff. I've messed around with Avarice and Greed purely because I've never had the opportunity to use Avarice and Greed really before. I've been trying out like what I'm sure are absolute season one tactics that everyone else would be really, really familiar. The sort of the confidence on Kosset going into an engagement with Dirge and
secret tech.
It's not even secret tech. It's obvious tech. to the point where I was playing my local pundit last week where I did the Obulus sprint, obey himself for a jog, and then scored a goal. And he said, I did not see that coming, purely because no one has used that play since season two.
It's funny you say that. Like, I was thinking the day about Masons and the Malamis missile, and that was a big tactic in season one and two. It's changed a little bit now because the way superstructure works with influence allocation. But basically the main Masons tactic for, you know, load up Mallet, kick off with him, bow him forward. And I was thinking, if I did that at the tournament now, a lot of people actually remember it happening, because I haven't seen it for ages. Yeah.
Do you think part of the reason that happens less now is because the tooled up not being on the monkey, being on tower, means that you now need an extra piece to set it up?
Maybe, but nowadays taking tower is not a big issue anyway. Like in the past, it'd been more of an issue maybe, especially seeing the Masons teams used to be more loaded with the models from the Union. I think tower wouldn't be a tax nowadays as such.
I agree with that thought, but I just wonder if that's why you don't see it as much anymore. Same as the Chisel, because it used to be tooled up on the monkey. So, well, I'm taking the monkey. Well, taking them.
Now, of course, changed also because you can no longer get her to go. You can't crazy twice anymore and get her to hit her painful rage anymore like you could before. I'm not sure whether the changing of spear strategy to make allocation rather than gain changed it, or maybe because it was a tactic that people were all aware of and tacked against. And I might take it to tournaments and see what happens. although
it might be just be one, like one of those things that's become internet wisdom. You know, you stay 11 inches away from Tapper, you stay 16 away, you keep the ball 16 inches away from Obulus. It just might become one of those things that people do, and slowly they do it because that's a thing you do, but they might not know why it's the thing you do.
Passed down like a folk thing. It's like, oh, you always do that. Why? Yeah. It's not remembered why.
just don't bring it up. Just don't do it for the love of God, man. Yeah, like.
I think it's still strong. I think you're right. You don't really see it anymore, but it's still a completely sound tactic.
Go back onto the vaguely topic again before Jason passes out. Get some wine. About the whole sort of how do you approach a new guild. I think one problem I had when I was approaching the engineers was if I lost a lot of games in a row, I didn't lose many games in a row, but if I lost a few games in a row, my temptation was to change my lineup and go, actually, well, maybe I'll change captains, or maybe I'll change these two models. And again, if you want to improve, you probably want to change very few things at once. Maybe not run the same guild again and again and again, but certainly changing your entire lineup doesn't help. But then again, I mean, you've been doing the opposite, Rich, and changing your team all over the place. And I mean, have you found yourself getting more to grips with the guild? Or?
Interestingly, no. okay. I started off on quite a nice undefeated streak with Morticians, and I think maybe people have gotten used to how I play them locally, and now I'm on a nice losing streak with them. But I'm still really enjoying them, which I think is important. I've never at any point in my life played Magic the Gathering, which is a sentence that will make sense in a second. Don't worry, Andrew. And I was sort of introduced to the expression color pie through the Vincent Kirchhoff YouTube channel, which I can highly recommend if no one's seen it, which you have because it's a good little thing. And the idea that certain guilds are good at certain things, which is an obvious statement to make, but it's when you come across into other guilds and you go, or in any faction in any game, you go, okay, how do I do this? How do I do this? And I think that's a dangerous attitude to take when you change guilds. It's not necessarily something that you alluded to earlier when you're talking about going from masons to engineers. It's okay, how do I do engineering type? How do I do mason type things in engineers? It's not necessarily the best course of action to take. It's more, how do I do engineering things?
Yeah, exactly. Or like looking for analogs. Like, well, this model's kind of like that model, but different guild. It's like, well, probably not, because the way models fit together in different guilds is so different from each other.
Yeah,
like, well, this model's got reach and counter charge. Well, yeah, but they have, but they're not like brick and, you know, whatever. It's interesting. I guess going from blacksmith to morticians in terms of just the amount of options that Obulus has. I think he moved to probably one of the more complex models in the game, I'd say.
Yeah, he certainly appears that way, and that's a huge appeal because I've played a lot of Fillet, I've played a fair amount of Tapper, and had fun doing those. But of course, what Obulus brings is entirely not really comparable to either of those captains. Wrong game.
Masters of Malifaux.
That's a Malifaux thing. Yep,
I've heard of that game before. It's kind of like Guild Ball, but no football. And
that's the one.
Yeah.
Although there is a variant played locally which combines both games, which is very silly.
Yeah.
Is it called Guild Foe or Mali Ball?
Foe Ball.
That's a better name.
You're so close. You're so close, mate.
I thought I cracked it. I could see the puzzle in front of me, and I thought I know
you
where the pieces.
See the pun just sort of lying there. For you, but no, it's but I think one of the things that's most likely to make me change guild or faction or army or whatever is when I play someone from that and they do something cool that I've never seen before. And when you first see that superior strategy shenanigans, or you first see Puppet Master being utilized to its full degree, or the first time you see the Blackheart 12 inches of dodge, all of a sudden you go, that's cool, I really like that. I want to do that, as opposed to what I should probably think, which is, that's cool, I really like that, how do I make sure that never happens again?
You said Blackheart 12 inches of dodges.
Well, don't what's, he doing off. This,
what's he doing with his third influence?
Butchery.
Ah, yes, of course. I knew there was something else you could have done. I was thinking 12 inches, that sounds a bit short. Maybe it's just a bad activation.
Yeah, but that is the only time you can think that 12 inches is a bit short.
Yeah. So when you pick up a new guild, as you do, hopping around all over the place. Do you, when you deploy them for the first time, before you start playing them, before you pick your first six, do you theorize any strategies of how it's going to work, or do you literally just put them down to throw some influence on and see where the mud sticks?
I do an endless amount of theorizing, I think, both internally and at various chat groups and on Twitter and stuff like that. And if you're not on Twitter, feel free to theorize at me, because I'm always it's a highly enjoyable part of the game. Whilst I say I'm not a theory player, I do spend a lot of time doing it. It's just I'm not very good at doing it. And one of the things I tend to look at quite a lot is path to victory. I have no idea if that's a common practice, but it's that whole thing of where are my points going to come from?
I was going to say it's one of, if not the most important things when I look at a guild. I think, where are my points going to come from, and where are my opponent's points going to come from with this lineup? Like, who have I got in my team who's going to be a takeout? If that model gets taken out, how does it affect my strategy? Are they key to what I'm attempting to do to win the game? Are they a support piece or a control piece or a contribution piece? Are they a battery or are they, a feeder? I think about it a lot before I start playing them.
One of the things that's caused me to pretty much abandon all other games in favour of Guild Ball, and the thing that I really like about the game, is that it's a game with incredibly simple objectives which are retrieved through incredibly complex methods. You know, we know 2 points for a takeout, 4 points for a goal, you need 12 points, go. There are 24 points available, make sure you're playing for 13 points. Whereas other games that I've come across, whether that's the strategies and schemes of Malifaux, whether that's the constantly changing maelstrom of war of 40k, these are at times incredibly complex objectives, or constantly shifting objectives that one has to consider. Whereas with Guild Ball, it's just deal with the 13 points you need to win.
13?
I always look at it at one higher, because if I score everything and deny you one, then I've won. There are 24 VP available in a game of Guild Ball, ostensibly. So if I concentrate on the 13 points that I need, the 12 points that I need to score, and the 1 point I need to you stop scoring, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, I get that.
Because denial is part of the game. Despite what my performance with hunters would attest, denial is an important part of the game. You can't just let your opponent get as many points as possible. Man, there's a guild that I suck with. It's because that objective structure is so clear in Guild Ball, it allows you to really sort of dig deep into how you're going to go about doing it, which I really, really love.
It's interesting you mentioned about your hunters and not being good with them, because I guess that goes on to a bit of a question, which is related to some degree we're talking about, so I'm going to say it now, about the guilds, some guilds having different sort of skill floors and skill ceilings.
I think that's absolutely fair. I mean, if you go and watch the Beasts of War videos where Mr. Emerald Eyes himself goes and discusses the introduction of the hunters to the guys on Beasts of War, they describe it as perhaps not being a guild for a new player to start out with. So it's interesting to see Steamforged themselves, whether or not that's still true after Theron has been adjusted.
I think it still is, because they're still quite fragile, aren't they, for example?
There are entry-level guilds that don't necessarily mean that you can't be top-end competitive with them, but they're certainly, like, you know, Butcher's Burrows, they've got a very low entry level for being able to pick up, play, and enjoy. Like, you can lose with Butchers and Brewers and still have fun, because you just put influence down, you hit things and stuff happens. Whereas
you run all your models to the middle and you throw handfuls of dice, that's enjoyable.
Yeah, you know, ultimately, like, if you haven't got hands big enough for all the dice you're throwing, you're having a great time.
Yep.
But then you have the likes of, say, possibly Smoke Alchemists, but certainly Morticians and Hunters. And I'd probably put Farmers in the higher end category. Simply, the Farmers are simply in there because of the importance
so
of reliance tokens and the positioning, and the importance of positioning them correctly to maximize their efficiency. And the morticians and the hunters very much because it's a control game and understanding the importance of control and how you aren't, you know, we hear a lot of talk, or there used to be a lot of talk, you don't hear it so much now, that every point of influence spent should actually be converted into a point of momentum. I personally, I've never agreed with that because I, you know, it goes against the way that control teams work. But yeah, so I think if you pick up hunters or morticians early on, you will find the game, well, not always, because obviously some people are actually very good at it, but you will find the game has quite a steep learning curve and is quite difficult and not always fun. But once you unlock their puzzle, you'll have a lot of fun. And I, whereas like I said, like the brewers and the possibly even the blacksmiths to a degree, although, you know, there's a lot of bopping on the schnoozle with like sledge and things like that, which is fun. But
I know what you mean, because you know, you look at, I mean, what was the classic intro game was Butcher's Fish. If you were a pundit and you were showing off season one great, Guild Ball. Say again?
It's not a great introduction, to be honest.
that was the, you know, the very polar opposite of the game.
Yeah.
And the things that both of those guilds are good at have a direct correlation to points. You know, if you're using fish properly and you're scoring goals, you are scoring points. If you're using butchers properly and you're taking people out, you are scoring points. Where hunters and morticians and things like that curve is that they're nonsense. The things that they spend influence on don't necessarily turn directly into points. So yes, there will be a curve for new folk, and I still count myself as new folk, because you know the actions that you're spending do not result immediately in victory.
It's interesting, like that curve, isn't it? Because I mean, you're playing according to your channel, at least you're playing brewers because you wanted to go on to play blacksmiths, and you kind of thought that was similar.
Yeah.
I mean, did you find they were transferable when you play removed cross?
Yes, but not directly, or rather, it's sort of play style, but not play mechanic. In that, you know, you want to use Tapper to get up commanding aura. You want to use knockdowns to set up Hooper and Spigot for damage runs. This concept of I have a player that's going to set something up, and then a player that's going to reap reward from that setup. I think is concurrent across both guilds. Equally, they are guilds which are perceived to be slow, which you can then do things about, whether that's get over heres or auras and things that increase speed. So I think there is a very similar play style, but obviously the big thing is the heroic plays. Or rather, the complete absence of them in the way the blacksmiths that we've seen thus far. I do find it unlikely that future masters will have heroic plays, just because of their predilection towards heroic plays.
No, legendaries. You've just said the same thing twice, and it sounds
sorry.
No,
thank you, Junk Jason, for pointing out my mistakes. Appreciate it. So yes, you know, this is what happens when you try and paint models whilst talking on a podcast at the same time.
Be sober.
It's all right. You can do my drinking for me, buddy.
I will have to excuse me a second. I'll be back.
No worries. I can't imagine what that's for. If I hear a cork, I'll be able to guess. I think that is. Yeah, so play style-wise, I think they are quite comparable if you play blacksmiths like that. Obviously, with the advent of ferrite, that play style has become or can become a lot more football-y, I think.
You say that, but brewers have got, like, Spigot, for example, and they've got Friday, and it's not like they all have long sticks and walk just slowly.
No, you're absolutely correct.
I know Friday wasn't your favourite one.
We had a love-hate relationship, I think it's fair to say, in that I used her terribly and she failed to get points for me. Yeah, I don't blame Friday at all in this relationship. Yeah,
I couldn't believe it, because I mean, she looks to me like absolute money. You know, Dirty Knives are so good and her kick's great and nothing else. But I guess, you know, the thing about strikers is, like, I've played Flint a lot, and Flint will break your heart again and again and again, but you'll go back for more.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Garst is currently one of my top scorers in morticians.
Well, you should amble him forward, Ian. Hit things, knock him down.
Well, no, he's just been sprinting forward over fast ground and smashing goals in on one dice kicks.
Have you used much casket yet?
I've not. I'm literally holding the fella in my hand at the moment and giving him a bit of a paint job because I want to try him out. I don't think I'd given him much consideration.
So good.
Because I'm not a big fan of the sculpt. I think that is probably the kindest.
Oh, really?
I'm not a big fan of the sculpt.
Oh, you know that's wrong, don't you?
Say again?
You know that's wrong.
Why am I wrong? Tell me why I'm wrong.
Because you are. It's one of the most amazing sculpts that they've done from season one when, you know, as Russ admits, it wasn't, you know, his techniques have improved massively. But it's a dude with dreadlocks with a coffin on his back.
Yes.
I think it's going to be a stalemate pretty fast, this conversation.
Well, I must admit, I'm used to, in another game, which I always promised that like, I'm not going to bring up, but I do seem to mention every time I come out, I'm used to Death Marshals and Malifaux, which are essentially dudes with coffin on their backs with giant flaming skulls for heads. So where he has dreadlocks, they have giant flaming skulls for heads. And you know, I think giant flaming skulls for heads wins over...
I love the fact that, I don't know, he's one of those models who... When he's ambling up the pitch, I love the fact that the view from behind him is as spectacular as the view from the front. It's just a massive coffin on his back.
I'm looking forward to using him, and I'm definitely going all in on the casket time style play.
I haven't done it yet.
Staying on topic briefly, when I played Morticians for a month or two between jumping from Masons to Engineers, I found casket really fun to use, but really hard to get to grips with because of his permanently on aura of rough ground. I found I just forgot it all the time. I forgot it for my own team, so I was cheating. I forgot it for my opponent's team. I think he has a lot of moving parts, so I think learning him can be quite a bit of practice.
And I must admit, the sort of the build that I'm looking to try out this week, I am pretty much building the team around him. Because of course Dirge ignores the rough grounds because he flies and ignores all ground types. And I'm very keen, I think, to although I've given Avarice and Greed a good run out with Obulus because confidence is friendly model, not friendly guild model.
Is it really? Keen... I didn't know that.
It is, yes, which is sort of why I'm sort of rotating through the damage dealing in the Union, because whether it's someone like Minx or Avarice and Greed or along those lines, or even... missed for ball retrieval missions, confidence can be used on that charge, which is very, very nice. I'm keen to try Rage in a casket lineup because of course he'll ignore the foul odor emanating from the big zombie for exactly that reason, although how well that'll go I'm not sure, but you know, you don't know until you put things on the table. Are you now furiously checking the wording of confidence?
No.
It is friend model and that's a Federation Against Copyright Theft.
What?
I was hoping you got that reference.
At the start of videos, it always used to say, fact, Federation Against Copyright Theft.
Oh, okay.
That was totally...
Wow, videos. That's a topical reference there, buddy.
Especially seeing as over half our listeners are American, and they would have seen that.
DVD, then. I don't know. What do they have over there?
Over there.
Guns.
Yeah. You mean over half our listeners? You mean there's two Americans listening to this?
Yeah.
One.
That's maths.
No, Martin's listening to this.
Probably not.
But one of the questions for you then, Andrew, if I may be so bold, is certainly from listening to other podcasts that you guys do, it appears you've switched from Masons to Engineers whilst only really ever playing Honor in Masons. So why switch guilds without trying out all available captain options within?
As in, why did I change away from Masons rather than do all the Mason things first?
Yeah.
I tried Hammer maybe for five games or so, six games, and I thought he was terrible, basically. I don't know, I mean, I guess I just found that he didn't really grab me in terms of how I wanted to play the Masons, because I was quite in love with Honor's manoeuvrability and everything else that she can bring to the table.
Fair.
And also... Part of the reason I changed across from Engineers was that I painted them up and I quite liked how they looked. It was quite a fluffy answer to say, but I actually thought, oh, that'd be nice. I want to give them a try in the table.
Yeah.
And I was going to wait for a month or so, but I was persuaded to play the map Vengeance, the morning of Vengeance, rather than play Masons.
So it's kind of an unplanned jump a bit earlier than it was meant to be. I possibly cool. jumped across the podcast. That's something else to talk about. But to be honest, looking back at going back to Masons for a while, as I'm going to be doing now, I am quite looking forward to playing some ways I hadn't played for a while. For example, playing with Hammer. Obviously, it's changed a bit now for the better.
Yeah.
And also, I think because I've played them for quite a while, I was playing them very similarly. For example, I think one thing you have to learn when you're playing with a guild for the first time is how you unpack your teams, how you deploy them, how you sort of play your first turn, whether you're kicking or receiving, how you sort of either how you go for a goal run, if you want to go for a goal run, or how you position your people. And because of that, I was playing with the same sort of 6-7 models in Masons every time. So going after playing with Engineers for a while, I think my brain was sort of ticking away in the background, working out some ideas to do with the guild next. So I've got some ideas about Masons that I maybe would have tried before.
Okay.
Which includes exploring more of the guild, you know, and actually trying some more things out with them.
Does that mean you'll be putting granite and chisel on the pitch, or is that going a little bit too far?
I thought granite actually has some legs. Well, at least two of them. She actually was...
Hey!
It's funny because she had two legs. She's actually okay. I used her a few times, actually, and she's okay. Chisel, I tried Chisel, and I still think she's basically not very good. She has some interesting tech behind her, and if you play a certain way and isolate someone at the side of the pitch, she can do her character plays and everything else. And she's okay because she's got 2-inch reach quite fast. Maybe gets a fish team with like Shark, but to be honest... I don't really like her that much. I've tried her, and I think she was quite good when you could use it as a missile, but you can't use that anymore. Okay. But Granite's okay. I think also I want to give Lucky a good run.
I was going to ask about Lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've probably seen in your time in Engineers, even if that's just Vengeance, you've probably seen more change in Masons now than that isn't a change of season.
Yeah, quite a bit. And also, especially if the GICs end up being a thing, I think they really make Mason's team quite interesting as well, because some of the things they can do with those cards thing are really, really good. I mean, yeah. They changed last week, didn't they, again? But some of them look great for Mason's to have. For example, I didn't use Tower much before, and I want to get him more of a runner as well. Also maybe slightly reduce my love of Flint and try taking games without him occasionally. I didn't take him much in Season 2, because I decimate instead.
Mm.
Season 3, I barely played any unit at all, but I want to try some more things out with them again, and basically just re-explore some parts of the guild I hadn't really touched before, apart from Chisel.
So sort of bring it back then to your original question of how do you approach a guild when you're changing guild, jumping around. How is that going to be different this time around compared to when you first picked up Masons, seeing as they've changed quite so much? I'm not saying you've got a wholly new guild, but will there be a different approach this time around to how it was when you first picked up that box?
I think so. Like, admittedly, when I first played Masons originally, obviously I was kind of new to Guild Ball, so I think half the games when I was learning the guild, also me learning how the Guild Ball worked.
Sure.
But now, for example, I mean, before I'd do the same... I'd play each turn one basically almost exactly the same each time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try a few things out now and maybe just try some of the things out with Mason's first, second turn I hadn't done before. In my turn out, I sort of go back to type and do the same things again. That's good sound quality. Who's that? Is that you, Jason?
I haven't said anything.
That's a quality mic drop there. That's good.
I haven't said anything.
The big. I'm going to leave that in. I'm going to take it out. Some people. Right.
I've just been sitting here listening to you talking about
clunking,
Masons.
Big clunking noise. This is what I've got to work with. This is a professional attitude. Clunking away the potato.
Boring when you talked about Masons. Maybe I wouldn't have fallen asleep and dropped my phone.
And partially the reason why I've changed for Masons is often when Marston and Jason ask me about Masons on the podcast, I talk to them about it and they send me many, many, many messages through WhatsApp at the same time saying how boring they were. It's quite hard to talk about Masons whilst on WhatsApp they're calling you names.
Oh, the mythical singled out WhatsApp group.
Yeah, it's basically just trolling me, mainly.
That seems fair.
You have been you've been a lot more interesting since you've played Engineers, you know.
Are you going back to Masons now that they're the meta choice and are powerful again?
Are they? I mean, I don't know if they're, you know, I've got no idea if they are or not. Maybe. I mean, Engineers seem pretty powerful right now, right?
Yeah.
Well, they are. When you play them.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'm not that good a player to actually. but also, I think I still believe in Guild Ball quite strongly. That pretty much, especially now with some of the changes, that every guild is good at doing things they want to do.
I've like, you know, as we are talking about jumping around guilds, whenever I've played a different guild, I've always felt as long as I've played that guild in the way that that guild's designed. So like the other day when I played the Hunters, trying to play the controlled game, slowing it down, whatever, I actually didn't do badly with them, considering I had not a lot of experience with them. But by playing them in the way that I think they're meant to be played, it actually seemed to work all right. Like when we had that singled out tournament and I played Ox Butchers, and I played all of one game beforehand, I just played them how I thought they were designed to be played, and I won three of my games. So
I think your benefit also, Jason, is I think you spend a lot of time, probably more than me, you spend a lot of time thinking about the game a lot, don't you? You sort of a lot of time running through your head ideas and matchups and stuff. And you think you do a lot of head ball.
No, that is fair to say. Like, I don't play as much as I'd like to, but I do think about things a lot, and I do have plays in my head that I want to do. I think like turn one you can do that, but after that you've just got to be adaptable. And you've got to be able to think on your feet and be like, okay, so turn one, you can have that strategy. But like when I played Hunters at the tournament the other day, I did exactly the same every single turn one, every single game turn one, and it caught every single one of my opponents out. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I'll keep doing this then.
I have that same turn one play that I do with my blacksmiths with the Steelforge 6, what has been lovingly dubbed the beardering ram. On YouTube. I do that every single game pretty much. And every single game my opponent goes, they move quick, which, you know, it is a first turn designed to move the team as far forward as possible and to sort of take midfield dominance.
Shocking. They move forward a little bit and then you go, oh, okay, that's quite far away. And then suddenly they get like tons of out of activation dodges. It's like, oh my God, they're right on me.
So how are these guys here? Or one of my favourite quotes was from Steve Cole, who was a fantastic opponent on the channel and really sort of took me to pieces with smoke. He just kind of looked at it and went, this has had thought put into it. I don't like that. which I thought was a great response. He then proceeded to light me on fire quite heavily, but there we go. Hadn't thought about it that much, clearly. Say again?
In the game.
Well, you can find that out by watching Don't Touch the Beard, Episode 8, over on YouTube.
That's a smooth, and in reply to that, here's a commercial.
Unbeknownst to most people, podcasts cost money to produce. Especially if you've got Jason on that podcast, and he goes on a bit. These poor individuals are somehow of the opinion that you want to hear them, that their opinions matter to you, and somehow improve your gameplay. If, for whatever reason, you feel like supporting these poor accursed individuals, sworn to be able to produce content for your benefit, you can do so through Patreon. For just $1, you will be classified as a mascot and entitle you to one knowing wink or nod from a cast member, if they know who you are. For $5, as a goalkeeper member, you'll gain access to the additional bonus time singled out feed, giving you more content that will build up in the app of choice before eventually being deleted. As a defensive midfielder at $10 a month, you'll gain a set of condition dice, allowing you to mark and annotate information that you've already got some way of recording, as well as all of the other features currently listed. At $20, and as an attacking midfielder, you can have a black singled out t-shirt and have access to opinion polls that Jason will never read and Andrew will obsess over compulsively. At Captain level, well, frankly, you can have a t-shirt of any colour you like. You can access opinion polls that people will read and pay attention to. And if you ask really nicely, Andrew will probably bust a nut over the object of your choice. These people are sadly afflicted by a cruel and unusual compulsion to spend late at night ignoring loved ones and friends, and even the subject matter that they're talking about, to bring you information that may or may not enrich your lives. Frankly, you have the power to help these people. And from just $5, or $1 frankly, they will gain a sense of accomplishment that maybe, maybe out there, someone is listening.
Oh yeah, carry on.
What a charming voice that man has. So yeah, I get the whole sort of turn one activation so that you can do yourself. Although something you said to me earlier on, Jason, I thought was quite interesting, is...
Blimey.
Unlike...
I get that this is... The thing I'm going to talk about next is 100% unofficial, but it is something that people pay attention to and have a look at, is I don't understand how... the Guild Ball ranking system works. I think it's always interesting to have a look at, but I'm certainly used to a ranking system in that other game, which is it takes your best four tournament results, prescribes you points based on how many people were there, and that's your position. It's a very
Black Ops is, isn't it? That's how Ben's used to name that style.
Whereas the Longshanks one, which I think is excellent, and I love that website, and the interview that guy does on Strictly the Worst was great radio. Sorry, I can't remember the fella's name. Apologies to him. But you mentioned earlier, Jason, that if you swap and jump around guilds, that can potentially have quite a negative impact on your standing within the rankings. Do you think that puts people off jumping about?
Yep, 100%. Which is why I don't look at the rankings, because I'd rather jump around and do whatever I want to do. And I don't care where I am, but some people will care about it 100%. And I know that for a fact. I know people who've said to me, even like yesterday, that's going to affect my rankings or whatever. So people do care, and it will put people off. Whereas Ben's system allowed you to get four good results, and then you're like, this lasts for a year. If I want to dick about, I'll dick about.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely will impact on some people and how they go about making their decisions and what they're going to do at an event.
Do you think that's a shame?
Yes. 100%, because you should go to an event. You should just go and do what you want to do. It's your opportunity to play four or five games in a day and have fun and just enjoy it. And
well, you still can, can't you? I
mean, you can. If you care about the rankings, then you can't necessarily, because if you perform badly because you've taken something that you just want to try out, it will impact on your rankings, and therefore it may make you decide not to do that because you care about your rankings.
How long do they last on the system? Do they have a decay rate like things do? Do they last all the time?
I don't think they do a new one, because my Brewers rankings from like when I first started playing the game are still on it and count.
But do they count towards your points total still? Do they last on there forever? Yes.
So I'm not 100% certain on that, but I'm pretty certain on that. Because it takes the new rankings takes into consideration every game that you play against every opponent. Play and every game that they play. So I don't understand it completely, and I apologize if anyone's listening to this who's related to that, but I think it could mean that if you played someone a year ago who was good but they get bad, your ranking could go down because their ranking goes down. I'm not 100% certain on that.
That doesn't sound right. Surely not. That's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not 100% certain on it. I'm not sure if it's like your ranking for that event is based purely on the standings
it's not a snapshot in time. It's a constantly dynamic, evolving thing.
I can only assume that because, for example, Alex Box was number one and Jordan Neck is now number one, and Jordan hasn't played since July. So how Alex has gone from being number one to number two and Jordan hasn't played, I don't understand.
In that case, surely Jordan will always be number one.
In our hearts.
But like I say, I'm not 100% certain on that. I can only go anecdotally on the evidence that I've seen and how, from what I ascertained from that interview. But I mean, you know, there's smarter men than me who'll be able to explain it clearer.
And please leave a comment in the doobly doo below.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh wait, you guys don't have comments, do you?
Well, we have we post on our on the forum, you know, every episode, and we tend to get at least one comment every three episodes. So. So maybe we'll get one telling us how wrong Jason is, which I fully approve of.
It's often usually me correcting something you've put in the show notes. So.
Show notes? You don't even listen to this podcast, Jason. You never listen to your own voice.
No, I can't stand it. And I pity anyone who's listening to it. But thank you very much for putting up with it.
I put a whole whole intro on, slagging you off. He didn't listen to it.
I think the only thing that could make this show more painful to listen to is if it was just me and Connor talking.
That'd be loud. Unfortunately, you know, there is ability to turn Connor down in post when you're on a podcast with him.
That's like what Perkins is. We have to play his soundtrack at quarter speed.
Perkins talks at a perfectly normal bullet speed. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was fine for me.
Yeah, it would do. You talk fast as well.
Yeah, it's anyway. Hard, like trying to outdo each other, trying to get faster and faster and faster until we reach some sort of event horizon.
Slowly trail off like some sort of meteor leaving comet, leaving orbit.
Right, we're rambling now, aren't we? We're rambling.
A little bit.
Do we have anything else to say?
Guild hopping. That's the thing, right?
I think it's easy to do.
Guild hopping is fun.
But obviously, it depends on what you want to get out of the game, doesn't it? For example, if you want to become the best player in the world, it could be useful to stay with one guild for a while. Although then again, I think jumping guilds can help you get an appreciation of maybe weak spots for guilds. I think guilds can appear to be more powerful on the outside than they are when you play them.
I play in different guilds. I really enjoy it, which is why I don't look at the rank. I say I don't look at the rankings. That's a lie.
You look at the rankings, but you're able to quote to us exactly who's at what spot, seemingly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I'm lying if I say I don't look at them. I do look at them, but I don't care.
You can't pay any attention to them.
I can't tell you where I'm ranked. I know I'm ranked third union player, but I don't know where I'm ranked overall, and I don't care. Because my overall ranking is affected by the fact that I like to, every now and again, turn up and play Ox or play Theron or whatever. And I highly recommend just playing whatever you want and just enjoy it. It's a game. Like, just do it.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
But if we are about to sign off, I do have to shamelessly plug a team event that's coming up that I am going to.
And it's the very inspiration behind my faction hopping as well.
Yes, and Rich is going to as well. And it is the Jumpers for Guild Jumpers for Guild Posts 3 on November the 4th in Downswood Community Center, ME15 8XG. It's almost like I'm nice. Reading it on a Facebook page.
Right now. Well done.
Seamless. It's three people per team. It's £45 per team. I am going as a team member of Operation Baby's Bottle, and I am soundly being supported and carried by the Heartbreak Kid, Charles Nurser, and Kumba. So, and I recommend, if people haven't played at a team event, do it. They're my favourite kind of event. I love it. It's a lot more fun.
Equally, I'm going along with some other people that have come along from competitive Malifaux to start trying competitive Guild Ball. So this will be our very first event, so you are guaranteed not to come last.
Ooh. I've looked at some of the teams. There are some good teams going, but there are also a few trays of muffins that are ready to be baked.
How dare you, sir?
Every time.
You get to choose if you're blueberry or double chocolate. It's up to you. As long as the oven's at 200 degrees, I don't mind.
According to Longshanks, I am ranked higher at engineers than JJ.
Is that right?
Yeah. That is not correct.
The guy who won the British Hobbly
wrong there.
Well, yeah. According to Longshanks, Connor, my good friend Connor Rooney, is UK number one, and I am ascribing us only coming third at WTC entirely down to him not being there at the weekend. So if you'd like to join me in blaming Connor for our not bringing home the gold, feel free.
Hang on, you're ahead of JJ. How are you ahead of JJ? He's like...
Well, I'm just an engineer, and I'm 10th and he's 11th. Which can't be right, because obviously he wins games and I don't win many games.
He's also sixth overall in the world, according to this. The other problem is it doesn't contain, and I know why it doesn't contain it, and it's not a criticism of the guy who does the rankings.
He does a brilliant job.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely.
It's a fantastic... though, it's very in-depth.
Yeah, just the dice math stuff is really handy.
It's not a criticism of him and where he gets his information from, because it is what it is. But it doesn't, for example, conclude any of the German meta, which we know is very strong.
Apparently.
Yeah. So it's, again, it's not a criticism of the guy who does it. He puts his time into it and he's done it and it is what it is. And it's because they don't use tiebreak, and that's fine. But that's why, for me, the information is as good as it can be, but it's not, you know,
everything.
Yeah, because although I don't think the Germans actually particularly use the Union, but anyway, that's by the by. The fact of the matter is we don't have any of the Germans or the Aussies on here, and we know that they've got big metas, so it kind of feels like...
The Aussies are undefeated at WTC.
They are, yeah. They've never lost there.
No, unlike at their own nationals. Whee!
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, well, we are trying to wrap it up, but I don't understand how you're ahead of... JJ! We're saying, well, I know we're trying to wrap it up, but I don't understand how you're ahead of JJ. Don't know who John Parrish is, but he's the highest ranked engineer.
I don't know. Maybe... I don't know. I don't know how it works. To be honest, I haven't looked at the rankings much in the past few months because I've been doing very well, and also I just lost interest in looking at them. I used to look at them a lot in the past, but recently I've not lost them much. And yeah, apparently I had JJ, which there's always some mistake there because, you know, he wins. He won he won the nationals, didn't he?
He's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. Yeah, with engineers, so there we go. Anyway, yeah. Thanks for listening, those who are. Follow me, the player better than JJ, at singled_outGB.
I've just found out rather embarrassingly that John Parrish is a guy who I lost to in the final round of an event, and I didn't know who he was.
Most professional episode ever.
Yeah.
Sign off.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm Jason. Whatever. Deal with it.
This is brought to you by wine, this episode.
I'm Rich. You can find me on Twitter at beard_minis, Instagram at beardminis, and at www.youtube.com/c/beardminis, where every week you can watch me video document and then talk nonsense over the top of Games of Guild Ball on my web series, Don't Touch the Beard.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.